chance of showers into the afternoon, with a variable high cloudiness, gust of wind.
A variable gusty high cloudiness, ladies and gentlemen, and gusty winds. Ladies and gentlemen, bienvenue, welcome, welcome to the French Connection. Daryl Bradford Smith, your host for the next 50 minutes. For the next two short segments here, we have Annie Machon. We're going to be continuing our interview, and she's going to be telling us a little more about the book and about some of the things that they treated in that book, and also about their recent trips around both Britain and parts of Europe, trying to drum up support for a relook, or a, I think, a first look at 9/11 and all of its all of the things that were not ever touched upon in that first investigation, or as I like to refer to it, as a whitewash. And so we'll go right back to Annie. Annie, you know, the book itself, when you wrote it, it was in response to what was, in your minds, both you and David, criminal activity within these organizations. And when you brought out these facts, what was the response of the intel community? I mean, did they try to charge you with State Secrets Act and everything else?
Absolutely. They have a law in this country called the Official Secrets Act, which is designed to ensure that whistleblowers are prosecuted. There is no defense under law whatsoever. You can't even argue you did what you did in the public interest. So, for example, I was arrested and questioned. I was never actually charged or prosecuted. David went to prison twice because we went to France initially, and the British government asked for his extradition. He was put in prison. 4 months later, the French just said, no, I mean, a whistleblower is a political figure, and we don't extradite, so merci à la France. in terms of the second prison episode, he went back to the UK voluntarily in the year 2000, expecting to be put on trial within 6 months, because, I mean, it's old news by then. And they took over 2 years to put him on trial. During that time, they hauled him through a series of pre-trial hearings in order to make sure that he couldn't say anything to his accusers when he got up in front of a jury. Despite that, some of the jury were in tears. I mean, they were ordered to convict. They didn't have a choice in the matter. They were ordered by the judge to convict him. And he faced 6 years in prison. In the end, he got 6 months. But it wasn't just ourselves. I mean, all sorts of other people have been victimized. His brother and two of his best friends were arrested on trumped-up charges. A student supporter who'd done an interview for a student newspaper was arrested under the Official Secrets Act. Various journalists have been questioned, or one of them, in fact, has been prosecuted and has a criminal record. I mean, the whole sort of bully boy scaremongering tactics went across the board, not just the two of us.
Well, you know as well as I do, every time he's done my show, he gets another letter from them. He said it's the only time that he talks to anybody where he still gets letters from these people.
Absolutely. In fact, what they did, they took out what they called a temporary injunction against him, which banned him from saying anything to anyone ever. And that was back in 1997. The temporary injunction is still in place, and the government is now trying to enforce it through the civil courts.
Well, I know when he was on my show the first time, he hadn't heard anything from them in quite a while, and they got a letter almost right away. And the second time he was on, he got another one. And I don't know where, has that developed into something else now?
Yes, they're now trying to take him back to court and do him for the injunction, get it enforced, and make it a permanent injunction for the rest of his life. So all I can say is you're obviously rattling the right number of cages because they don't like your show.
They don't like my show.
No.
Well, you know something, Annie? I think I wear that as a badge of honor. The fact is, I do the due diligence. I do my research, and I have good people around me. And the truth doesn't need support. The truth just needs people to share it. It can stand on its own merits. When you're going out speaking to crowds and groups and sharing the information you've been able to acquire over time, what is the response of the crowds and what kind of things are said?
Oh, I would say it's about 99% positive. A lot of people come along, partly because of David's notoriety. They want to hear about MI5 and MI6. But obviously, we talk about our time there and the various episodes of false flag terrorism, which we saw going on ourselves. But then, of course, we've done a lot of research into the issues around 9/11 and 7/7. So mm-hmm. We expand out to that. And I would say there's one quite amusing little episode. We went up to the Scottish Parliament to do a press conference about the extraordinary rendition issue, and then did a talk on 9/11 that evening. And one of the Scottish members of Parliament came along in a really sceptical frame of mind. He just thought it was going to be a load of guff. And he went away absolutely convinced. He saw one of the films that was being made about the 9/11 issues and just went around sort of telling all his colleagues in the Scottish Parliament to go and look at this issue. It's too important to ignore.
Well, you know, the rest of the world has been threatened off of this, as you are being, you're being threatened as well. Things happening to me over here, they're peeking in my windows and wrecking my computer and cutting lines on my phone and all kinds of stuff. And it's right now it's at the point of just aggravation, you know, but
yeah.
I'm certain that, you know, if they see this thing starting to unravel, these folks are not going to let themselves be taken down. So I worry about trapped rats and how they react, you know. What do you think these folks have in mind for us?
Well, they will start by trying to ridicule us, or they'll ignore us to begin with and have we go away. Then they'll try and ridicule us and make us out to be fantasists and conspiracy theorists. It's always a wonderful tag to put on anyone. But by doing that, they try and shoot the messenger. They will not address the issue in the message themselves. That's what they do to all whistleblowers. That's what they do to all seekers after truth. And that's what they're doing at the moment. As you say, it could get nasty. I mean, I think a lot of the very draconian laws that are being pushed through, certainly in the UK, are designed to make sure that when the balloon does go up, they can control the population ever more tightly, and that's something to watch out for. But they will get vicious, and they will try and intimidate us. I mean, from what you've said, that's exactly the sort of stuff that Dave and I have been living with the last 8 years.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, when I said it, I had actually people say that's not true, and I, you know, early on in this thing, I feared them looking into me, but nothing really happened originally because I wasn't making too many waves. I was a ripple in a pond. And now, over the last several months, that has changed by and large. And what's happened now is they are paying attention. And, boy, it's obvious to me. And it's got my wife a little bit in a knot, you know. And but, hey, we slog on, you know.
We have to. And, you know, there are more of us than there are of them. And, you know, the more people who start questioning all these issues, the more protection we have. And also, you know, publicity. Just keep on the airwaves and people know you're there and know what you're talking about. And it gets much more difficult for them to shoot us down if we are visible to people.
Both literally and figuratively.
Absolutely. Don't tell your wife I said that.
Well, you know, being in London was a very nerve-wracking experience to me, and I didn't feel terribly safe there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was because, you know, I knew that over there they are closer to what's going on in America than they are in France.
Yes.
The French public and the French services are much more removed of these issues than they are in either America and Britain, and certainly they haven't participated as much either. But I don't see a very much difference between their politics, though, because the French government and the Spanish government and the Italian government and all these other governments, they know that this 9/11 is a big lie. And they're still reporting to their public that it was Al-Qaeda and 19 hijackers. I mean, it's hogwash, and yet there isn't a single Western government that has stood up and told the truth.
No. I think there's a great deal of fear, you know, amongst governments. Also, of course, there are always members within any elite who are all sort of closer to each other than they are to the populations. But I think the other problem, of course, is centrally controlled media outlets on the whole. Most of the major media outlets are owned by a very small number of companies and individuals in this world. And,
well, they're all Zionists, too.
Yeah, well, in some cases, perhaps. I don't know.
Well, actually, all cases, if you look into it, which is really frightening.
Yeah.
I mean,
well,
you take... Yeah, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, just the sense that, you know, we can't get to the truth. I mean, when Dave and I read newspapers in this country, we don't actually just absorb the facts and think, oh, right, that's what they're telling us. What we're looking at is trying to deconstruct what's going on behind. Who's leaked this? Why are they saying this? What's their agenda, you know?
Well, in the next segment, I want to give you details. It's the last segment with us, ladies and gentlemen, for Annie. I want to have her give her details on the book and how you can get it, and where she's coming up next, and what she's got planned for her and David in the near future. When we return, more from Annie Machon. Stick with me. We are back, and it's great to have my guest here with me today. She's going to give us a little thumbnail sketch of the book that she wrote, because her boyfriend David was not permitted to write the book, in fact. And so they got around that little restriction by having David tell the story and Annie write the book. And it worked out well so far. And how are the sales of the book going, Annie?
Very well, very well. I think it's now in its third imprint. This is despite having no national media coverage in the UK. It was just blacklisted, so.
Well, I've tried to get the thing out far and wide, and I've got a copy on my shelf over here. So you want to give the people a little thumbnail sketch of what it is you discussed, and then afterwards give them an idea how they can get their hands on it.
Sure, yes. Well, the book's called Spies, Lies, and Whistleblowers, MI5, MI6, and the Shayla Affair. And basically, it just documents our time in MI5 and what happened to us afterwards, looking at the way we were recruited, what was going wrong within MI5, all the political stuff, the IRA stuff, the Middle Eastern stuff. And then also tell them a bit of the story about what it was like to be a gamekeeper turned butcher, go on the run from them, and the victimization, the way that the government treated us, and some of the court case as well, and the just illegal things that the government got up to. So it's really an account of the last 8 years, but looking at the very serious issues while we were in the service as well.
Well, they're trying to mess up your voice right now. It keeps going in and out. I don't know. Are you on a cell phone?
I am indeed, yes, but we always have problems on this phone.
Well, here's the thing, okay. The book is available both on my site and on Amazon.co.uk.
Mm-hmm.
And you're able to get that, ladies and gentlemen. And where are you going to be speaking next?
Well, the next one is a theatre in Lincolnshire tomorrow night. It's a sort of audience with David Shaler and myself. So hopefully it's going to be quite light-hearted as well as looking at some of these serious issues. And then we've got a number of other talks sort of lined up around the country. So we've got quite a lot on our plate at the moment. We've got that, trying to get the message out about the intelligence services and on 9/11/77. I need to get working on another book as well, looking at 7/7, David and I are going to be looking at. And also, of course, we're going to be very involved in the Stop the War Coalition in the UK in the run-up to what looks like a strike against Iran.
Well, it does look like that right now, and we've got to talk privately about some of the motivations for this. You got a slight taste of it in that first dose of Benjamin Friedman, but now that you've opened the door a little bit to this information. Boy, you're going to get an education. My listeners know this stuff because they've been learning about it now for about a month and a half, 2 months.
Uh-huh.
But it is really powerful stuff, and it all makes sense when you get done, Annie. You're going to know the real story. And wow, be careful. it's tough information. But
it always is.
Well, yeah. But so David and yourself, tomorrow night you'll be in a private session. Where in the town again is?
It's a town called Stamford. We're at the Arts Theatre, and we're doing a talk there. I think
okay.
It starts at 8:30.
Well, I got to tell you something. I wish both of you very well, and tell David that you guys are going to have to come over and visit me in France. I know your dad's got a place not far from me, so next time you're over visiting with it's Nick, right?
That's right, yes.
Yeah, well, next time you're over visiting Nick, you're going to have to just jump in a car and come on over to the farm here, you know?
Absolutely. No, we'd love to. I mean, we always feel much more comfortable in France as well. As soon as you're out of the jurisdiction of the UK, you can sort of relax, you know?
Well, thanks again for coming on today, and I appreciate your time with me. And ladies and gentlemen, I want to give my best to both David and Annie Machon. And, you know, Godspeed and keep up the good work.
Well, thanks very much. Good to
see you. Thanks, Ann. Bye-bye now. That was, you know, ladies and gentlemen, when we have people on that are placing themselves in between the information and the authorities, they need to be congratulated for their efforts. I went with David in London to a television broadcast where millions of people were watching this broadcast, and I proceeded to tell the audience that 7/7 was an inside job and a hoax, and this was long before anybody had said it. This was a you know, the press didn't pick that up for weeks, and I said it the night that I arrived there, and in fact I did it right here on the radio, and it was a very powerful set of interviews that I did over there, and David and I we raised a bunch of hackles over there for that, and ever since that time I've been having terrible problems with my phone anytime I call the British Isles. And I'm imagining that's probably going to continue. But, you know, the French connections, this has been a long week for me. Of course, every week is. I'm a one-arm paper hanger over here in France trying to both organize the programming and do the research and you know, get the stuff underway and find the guests and all this stuff. And it's the guest list, because of the subject matter that Eric and I have been working on, people are becoming frightened to speak. I've had several people say that they've been told not to do my show anymore, bluntly. And that has, you know, I won't go into who's been told to, because it wouldn't help them, you know, to do that, nor would it help me. But everybody who's in this has their own limits, and I have to respect their limits, how far they're willing to go and what they're willing to do on the radio, or even if they're willing to come on at all. It's painful to find out that people are getting frightened off, and including, you know, many others who used to post our stuff, they're beginning to become a little bit nervous about it because it's dangerous information. But here's the interesting thing that I found. It only makes sense when you look at everything. And I've turned Annie on to this information, as well as many, many others. And once you take a look at it and you listen to Ben Friedman and you listen to all these audios and then start listening to the subsequent documentation that we've been able to provide, and then look at the planning that's been going on. Look at Iraq and Iran and what they've been doing in Syria. All of the things we've been saying make absolutely perfect sense. The actions and the documentation and the history are all in sync with each other. In other words, it's not a difficult proposition once you realize that these are the facts on the ground, these are the documents they've provided, and here's what's happening, you know, with the past of it all. It becomes irrefutable. And I wonder how long it's going to be before we get the larger groups within this movement to embrace this truth. Certainly, we have moved everyone toward talking about this subject. World Zionism was not even discussed until Eric and I broached it some months ago. It was only spoken about on the periphery. We were also the first people to post information about Rothschild on our website. We were the first people to discuss these issues anywhere in the world. They were lightly touched on Carol Valentine's website, which, very courageous gal, you got to go there and read her stuff. But nobody did it in the media, nobody. And now everybody seems to be talking about it, and they're starting to pick the ball up. It seems like we're making some traction, ladies and gentlemen. When we come back, the phone lines will be open, 1-800-259-5791. Gentlemen, we got a big wind down here for the next half hour. We got callers. If you'd like to call in and discuss things that we've had on for the show this week, you're more than welcome to give me a ring here, and we can discuss some of the issues we've touched on yesterday, especially because they are powerful. They were, without a doubt, that was probably the most powerful program the French Connection ever put together. Christopher and Eric and I, We were firing on all cylinders yesterday, and you know, the situation is dire, as I enunciated yesterday, and I repeat today. We are in a very serious state here, and we are in a race against time to beat these people to their next big disaster, and that happens to look like Iran at the moment. And, of course, it seems to me they're setting up, like Christopher alluded to, that they might be working towards some sort of nuclear exchange, because many countries are taking an opposite side of the Americans and the Israelis and the British. One of them is Pakistan, came out and said that they would side with Iran, or some of the people in Pakistan did. The Russians said so. And one needs wonder, are they siding by design, or are they siding with them for ideology? I mean, it seems like to me that Russia has been under the thumb of these globalist Zionists for many, many, many years. And if they were to take an action opposed to what America was doing, it would be by design. Because it seems to me America has been set up as the villain in the world, much like they did with Germany. where when Germany's fate was sealed, there were very few countries in the world that felt any empathy or sympathy for the Germans, because they felt like the Germans had done this to themselves, when in fact, if you take a look at what has been shared both in the media and outside the media in America, most people are still in the dark about the facts. And so America, the public in America is partially responsible in some ways, because, you know, they have watched their nation leak away without fighting to take it back. And that has not happened in every country. You can see here in France and many others where some of the traditions and stuff were fought over. They demanded that certain things remain, such as small shops in the villages and, you know, and certain qualities that the society demanded, like Sundays not having businesses open so that families could spend time together, and important things. And yet America has gone headlong into this abyss, this family-destroying, morals-destroying environment, without a fight. Somehow we were sold the idea that all progress is good. And that certainly, and now looking in hindsight, we know that that certainly is not the case here. I mean, all progress is just that, progress often. We often, as human beings, get it right early on in our experiences, and everything after that is superfluous as far as I'm concerned. Basically, ladies and gentlemen, we need, the most important thing we need in this life are quiet, loving moments with people we care about. And that's one of the things that's under threat, are those quiet moments. And, you know, one of the things that I really like about being where I am is that family dinners are part of the daily routine and ritual. You sit down at a table and you don't eat dinner in front of a television set. You eat it at a table. And you eat for about an hour and a half discussing issues in life. And there's always time to enjoy the food and sit at a table. It's not how fast can you scarf down your fast food in front of a television set, throw the bag away, and then go do something else. And I really got to tell you, this is the way I was raised. We sat at a kitchen table, and we ate a full meal. And it's nice to hold on to those important things, because that, to me, ladies and gentlemen, is one of my anchors in life. And the interesting thing is, although they have reported some increase in obesity here, it's not anywhere near what America is. I mean, trust me. The way people eat here is certainly not the same as the Americans do. We're not addicted, by and large, to massive amounts of fast food, although that is creeping into the society. And there are no OGM foods here. We don't have organically modified corn and wheat and all these other vegetables. And the vegetables here taste better. The eggs are better tasting. They don't grow them I don't know. I'll give you a good example, ladies and gentlemen. An eggshell here is still hard like a rock. I remember when I went back from my last visit and I cracked an egg, it felt like the thing was a micro shell on it. I mean, it was just like it could be crushed in. It didn't seem like it had any structure, and the yolk of it didn't have any flavor to it. And I said to myself, my goodness, what is this? And I had forgotten that America's eggs just don't have any flavor to them. And I just was, whoa. But it's we used to. Before we factory farmed our eggs, before we factory farmed our milk, before we factory farmed the corn and the vegetables and all of the things, these things were not bettered by turning them into a factory environment. It just doesn't happen. But now we're stuck with what we've done. You know, we've got these other disease-producing substances that have been sloshed around in our bodies, such as the mercuries from our vaccines that you're required to have. Now, I don't see why anybody should be required to take a poison into their body. Now, of course, there are processes and things that you can go through to be exempted from those inoculations, but every single year, everywhere you go, you will come up against a brick wall with not being able to prove you had this shot, that stuff, this stuff. But is it worth it? You bet it is. You want your children with autism? I don't think so. You want yourself to get a buildup of heavy metals and mercuries in your body? I don't think so. And these are the consequences of these products. And then, of course, aspartame. And I got to applaud this interview that Jack Blood brought together today, because it really was packed with information about aspartame, and that stuff is absolutely frightful. Now, you know, these are important things to me. I spent a lot of time in the food industry, and I got to tell you, wholesomeness of food is one of the building blocks of a nation, and we have lost one of the most important foundations of our country. The quality of our food for our public has turned out to be almost void of vitamins. And then, of course, everyone's using microwaves, and if you don't know it yet, microwave ovens kill vitamins. They break them down with radiation. And then the food you eat becomes sterile. That's right. You know, I know it's a faster way to do something, and everybody uses them today, and it's a very convenient thing. But if you really knew what was happening to your food, you might think twice about not using one of those. I've stopped using them. When we come back, ladies and gentlemen, if you'd like to call in the French Connection, it's 1-800-259-5791. We'll be right back after these messages. Stick with me. Down. We are winding it down. Great to be back with you here. We got another long segment, and we got a caller from California. You're up from California. Who's this again? Hello?
Hello.
Who do we have?
You have Keith from California.
Keith, how are you?
I'm doing fantastic, my friend.
What have you got to say today, Keith?
Well, I wanted to, it's two things, actually. I wanted to discuss a little bit of strategy with you, and I did want to offer a mild criticism and get your response.
All righty.
Okay. Well, I think we both would agree that one of the most important things that we all can do right now is to, you know, collect and confirm as much information as we possibly can and properly allocate blame.
Right? Mm. Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's a big part of the thing. We've got the vast majority of the folks here in my part of the world watch neocon network television and believe that that's what's really going on.
Mm-hmm.
So it's very difficult to engage somebody in their belief system and get them to buy into what we're saying without accusing us of being, tinfoil hat wearers.
Well, what you need to do, I'll give you a quick response on that.
Sure.
You need to find people who are receptive to start with, and I just bypass the others.
Well, okay, and that's part of the strategy thing that I wanted to talk about. It is a matter of numbers, you know.
Yeah.
In sales, obviously, you want to be able to qualify the folks that you're going to spend time with, but there is also the law of averages. If you get the word out to enough people, well, then you'll wake up somebody who's a fireball like yourself that you might not have, you know, if you didn't have a way of waking those folks up without putting them on the defense automatically or them labeling you some sort of conspiracy wacko.
Yeah, but there's a theory I want to share with you. There's a theory I want to share with you about in marketing. There are shapers of the opinions of a society. Generally speaking, they are very small in number. And in the area of geopolitics, it is a special group of educated people who actually foment the rest of the nation's belief system under the surface. And so you don't really need a huge group. You just need the movers and shakers who have the ability to convince others.
Okay, I would agree with that.
Yeah.
But we are very limited in how much time we have, clearly.
We are limited, you're right.
So it is sort of important to be able to broadcast a message that doesn't require you to spend a lot of time qualifying each one of your prospects. And that brings me around to the like I said, it's a mild criticism,
mm-hmm.
You know, because I've come a long way in my transformation from being a, you know, bushbacker, which is what I was, mm-hmm. to basically a political dissident. So,
I'd say somebody who's living in the truth, but go ahead.
Okay, well, you know, other people would qualify it another way. Any case, there has been a metamorphosis, a series of stages that I went through on this road to, quote-unquote enlightenment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've changed my mind about things as I got more and more data.
Yeah.
But one thing's really important to recognize is that if somebody would have came to me right from the get-go and hit me with both barrels and said, you know, all of... Because what you guys get into, like yesterday's program was a great program. I enjoyed that.
It was the greatest radio program in the history of radio. What are you talking about? I mean, nobody has ever had the truth so bluntly explained to them ever, Keith. We put it right out there yesterday, and we said to the world that we just discovered who the bad guys are for the last 1,500 years. And no one has ever done that on live broadcast before and lived to do another broadcast, trust me.
Right. But if, like me, for example, I'm not the brightest bulb in the batch, but if it weren't for the series of stages that I've gone through, I might have rejected a lot of what you said yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
Based on a couple of emotional responses that I would have had to the things that you said, you know, mm-hmm. which are derivative of engrams that I've received from my programming.
Yeah,
so
that happens to all of us. Yep.
It does.
Well, which one specifically would you have had that resistance to?
The fact that the word Jew gets used a lot, I mean, I think some folks would, like I take offense when somebody says that George Bush is a born-again Christian. I'm sorry. I just, you know, he doesn't. Not according to the Bible that I read. So,
well, what would you have me call them?
I mean, that's the question, and I don't really care what you do one way or the other. The one
no, but I mean, what would you have me call a group of people who are followers of Judaism, except Jews? Could I call them something else? I do call them Zionists mostly.
I think Zionist is a pretty good thing. I don't think a lot of people know what it means exactly.
Well, we're trying to define terms as well, which is part of the other challenge that we've got.
That's true. And, you know, there's no way that I can really counsel you on what you should call these people or what you shouldn't. The one thing that I see as being sort of a flaw is going after, like, for example, some of the other videos out there. Like, I'm a huge fan of Eric. I think the guy does great work. The way he thinks about things is right on par with how I like to think about things. His video is exceptional. Loose Change, on the other hand, is real good for making an easy transition off of Fox News and into the things that we're talking about. It doesn't point the finger like you do. And you might have data that they don't have. But it doesn't
to know who they're working with behind the scenes, and that's really why we did what we did. Because they are working with people who know better. And they're trying to direct people away from who we've discovered. And that's why we've done that, Keith. Stick with me, Keith. We'll do some more time together. Ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back with Keith and myself, more on The French Connection. And ladies and gentlemen, we're back. We've got Keith on the line from California. Keith, you got to make it quick. I got another caller right after you, and we've got 3 minutes left. What's your point?
I'll do my best. I sort of compare it to boxing, so to speak. If you're trying to land a knockout punch, you got to get the guy punched drunk first. If you try to lean in with, you know, the leaping left hook, you're going to miss most of the time. And I just don't think that we have time to qualify every single person that we want to talk to. We got to get the word out fast. And using some of these more rudimentary, maybe not so accurate videos that make it easier to transition off of network propaganda and into something that is more realistic, I don't think it's a bad thing.
Let me give you my take on that so you understand why we did what we did.
Sure.
We happen to know that they have been working behind the scenes with people whose sole intention is to obfuscate and send people down the wrong road. We know that because we've been fighting these people for a very long time. And so we do not want anybody building up credibility in this movement who's working to send people down the wrong road. And we know these people are working together because we've been battling them. And the simple truth is that when we came to that realization, we had a choice to make. We could either let them build credibility and start taking market share away from us and ultimately have an audience for themselves when they need to manage the truth, or we could say right up front that we thought this was nonsense and that we know that they were using their position to send people to a half-truth. And you know, omission is a lie in itself if it's intentional.
Right.
When you omit truth in something intentionally, it is considered a lie in a court of law, and it's considered a lie by, if you take a look at syllogisms in logic. So when you take a look at this in any rational way, if we were to let it stand, what we would have been doing is building our enemies' war chest, allowing them to gain more credibility, and in turn, taking some attention away from the ultimate truth, which is where we've arrived at, you know, over the last few months. And that's really why we did it. If this was an honest and objective examination, and we knew it wasn't built up by bad guys, we would not have said anything.
Right. It could still be used against them, you know. And you're only going to watch that video one or two times before you're pretty well understanding what's on there, and you're ready for more information. It's like I was trying to tell you before. When I first started out, I didn't know all the things that you're talking about, and I would have rejected it at the time on general principle. But as I got more and more information and started digging into it deeper and deeper, I learned more stuff. And these videos really give us a way to get the ball rolling. You can't get the ball rolling and hit them with both barrels.
We don't want to build up the credibility of people that we know are not honest.
Well, it's like
we don't want
them
to have Excuse me?
It's like sending them to kindergarten. You know, you start off with something easy.
It isn't if you know that these people's job is to create deception. And when you realize that the group that is behind some of these people are intending to be deceptive, then you have to speak out against it because they will be building credibility off of that video.
Last point, I'll let you move on to the other other guy.
We're already done, my friend. Last point, go ahead.
I woke up tons of people and brought them to your show that I ordinarily would not have been able to do without some of these, pity-pat sort of videos.
Well, you know, I've made my statement, you've made yours. I appreciate your opinion, and thank you for listening to The French Connection. We'll be back next week, ladies and gentlemen.